Welcome to Barnyard Language, honest talk about running farms and raising families. We are Katie and Arlene, an Iowa sheep farmer and an Ontario dairy farmer, with six kids, two husbands, and a whole lot of chaos between us.
While this is a podcast for farm families, sometimes our content isn't for the whole family. So kick off your boots, reheat your coffee, and join us for some Barnyard Language.
Hello, everybody. It's us again. It's Katie and Arlene. And, well, I mean, if you started the podcast, you know who it is. It's Barnyard Language time. So, Katie, what's happening in Iowa? It's spring. Are there birds? Are there lambs frolicking? What is going on the farm?
There is so goddamn much frolicking, Arlene. It is just frolicking central. You know how hard it is to not look out the window? You know, Arlene? For newer listeners, Arlene gives me shit every week because every week she asks what's going on and I look out the window like I can't actually see anything, but every week.
And then the sound goes weird because she's looking out the window instead of talking into the microphone.
So I'm not looking. We have 3 yearling ewes left to lamb. So one of the 4 went yesterday, which means that we're, knock on wood, very, very close to the end of lambing. All the big girl ewes have lambed and are out on pasture with their lambs, which is, I'll make some videos. It's the cutest goddamn thing in the world because they're just like, you can see them from the house and it's a couple hundred feet over there, but they just,
she's looking out the window
and I can't see them from here. And I know that full well, and I'm still looking out the window. They just bounce. And so you'll just see these little heads come flying up, you know, over the feeders and such. And they're doing that thing where they headbutt each other and they try to headbutt the big ewes, even though, you know, each of these lambs weighs like, I don't know, 20 pounds maybe. And the ewes are full grown, but they take it very seriously and they're all, you know, racing around and it's just real cute. Spring planting has started a little bit. The guys got oats in and Jim overseeded some hay ground. And I got my raised beds delivered and filled. I'm a little surprised that my father-in-law has not been over here working on them again today. He's really enjoying, you know, filling them in dirt and compost and more dirt and more compost and raking it out all level. And yeah, very exciting stuff.
And what are your plans for these raised beds?
Well, my first plan is to find a way to keep Bailey out of it. Our Aussie, because we compost.
Bailey's the dog, not a child.
Yes, an Australian Shepherd. Sorry. Because we compost animals, there are bones in some of the compost. And, you know, they do break down eventually, but they don't break down that quickly. And so yesterday I caught her digging out bones and then taking all of her toys and hiding them in the compost so that the other dog can't take them. So she's very, very busy. Obviously this will not mesh well with my plans for not having everything dug out the minute I put it in.
Yeah. Not throwing the seeds on the ground so the bones can get it.
Yeah. Cause gardening with children and chickens is already enough. I had not really considered the dog. She was living her best life yesterday, pulling bones out of there though. So there's that.
Now, not here is specifically because we're not close to bush, but a lot of places around here also have to put up fence to keep deer out of gardens. Is that an issue where you are?
Part of putting the raised beds in this year is that they are literally 10, 15 feet from the back door. So if you have enough dogs, the deer aren't a problem. They will come through and eat the apples from the orchard that's on the other side of the house, which is still quite close. But no, I've had more issues with chickens and ducks jumping up and eating things. And also,
right. The creatures that you have brought to the farm.
Yeah. My old dog would eat tomatoes straight off the vine, which was also a bit of an issue. So yeah, other than that.
And any kid news? The boy child is fully 6 now. Does he feel older?
He's fully 6. Not much different. The girl child last night, though, was one of those that I had to lock myself in the bathroom so she wouldn't see me laughing at her. Because big feelings are still big feelings to little people, even if they're not real logical to the rest of the world. The kids have been playing a lot of Minecraft, which they're really enjoying, and I'm really impressed with how well they do with the teamwork and figuring out the game themselves, because I don't know how to play Minecraft and I don't intend to find out. So the rule has been pretty hard. You know, you figure it out or don't play it. It's not mommy's problem. But yesterday she was making bees in Minecraft, and she was very, very proud because she had created this whole flock of bees, shall we say. And she was showing them off. She was so excited about them. And then about 10 minutes later, she came in just losing her shit. I was cooking dinner and she is just screaming and crying. And I'm, you know, I can't even figure out the problem. She goes, "The bees." And I mean, we have wasps and bees and things get in the house occasionally. So I'm thinking she's actually been injured in some way. No, indeed. She had made a shitload of bees in Minecraft, but then they were following her. And she wanted to go through a portal and go do something else.
Oh, she created a swarm.
Yes, but the swarm had like identified her as their queen and they wouldn't leave her alone and she couldn't get anything done. And everything she's describing is exactly like having small children. And I'm trying so hard not to just lose it because she is so angry that she made these bees and now they want her to do stuff with them. And I just...
Yeah. So then you had to go through a portal into the bathroom.
Yes. I had to shake off my little swarm and retreat to my portal.
That I also created.
Yeah. It was very sweet. I don't know what the final solution was for the bees, but yeah, it was very dramatic. So how have things been at your place, Arlene?
Well, it was a busy week. Our third child, so the 13-year-old was in a play this week. The school did a musical. They did Schrödinger, and it was incredible. Like I said on another that's upcoming in a couple of weeks, he is a kid who doesn't give us a lot of details about what's going on at school. You know, if you ask questions, he'll answer them for sure, and sometimes you get some info, but not the chattiest, and... Yes, he's just not a detail guy. So we knew that he had tried out. We knew he was attending practices regularly and was excited about performing, but really had no idea what to expect. And it was amazing. It was a whole bunch of kids. I don't know. I think I counted up. There were like 45 of them on stage, plus the whole backstage crew, and then all the teachers who helped to put it on. And it was just so cool to watch all these kids performing together in front of crowds of people who are coming to support them, and I just loved it. So I worked two shows on the door and then attended two shows and was in the audience for those ones, so that was very fun. And we got to invite grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins and all those kinds of people to come and watch, so that was fun too. And then of course you get to go out for ice cream afterwards, and then at their final night they had a little cast party, and so it was all the extra stuff that went around that event that was pretty fun. And then on the weekend, I was a port person. I'm not sure how much I've said before, but being a sandwich generation means that we have kids and we have parents, and sometimes they both need our time. So I was a support person for my mom this weekend. And so that was good. It's sometimes nice to feel like you're helping somebody. So that was something that I got to do. My husband stayed home and looked after things here on the farms, and I got to go stay at my parents' place and be a support member there. Oh, that was actually nice and hard, but nice in a way that time away, and I didn't have to worry about what was going on at home because I know that things were taken care of here, and I got to care for her. So that was pretty nice, because whenever I brought new babies home, my husband was a big help, but my mom always came and stayed for a few days after each of our kids were born, and that always felt like a pretty special time for us to have her here in our house with us. And so it's not the same, obviously, but it was nice to be able to kind of give back to someone who's helped me out a ton over the year. So that was good in its own way. So that was my weekend. And now this week, my oldest finished her first year of university, finished her last exam. And so she's moving out and coming back home. So that'll be an adjustment for all of us, I think, to have her back in the house. And we're excited about it. But I mean, also, you know, she's used to her independence and we're used to the way things have been for the last few months. So I'm sure there's always adjustment periods when things change like that. But we're excited that she's going to be back here with us for sure.
I do think with what you were saying about your mom, it's always really soothing to get a demonstration of how much community you have and how much community support you have, and to be in a position to worry about one thing, even if that one thing is a big thing, instead of having to worry about that one thing plus everything else.
Yeah, that's right.
We had a similar situation this week, and it's really nice to know that you have people to call on for assistance with things.
And to be in a position where when people say, let me know if I can help with anything, and you can say, yes, actually, here's a thing you can do. Or sometimes, no, I can't think of anything. But yeah, even to be able to say yes to some of those offers and know that that lets that person feel like that they're contributing and it feels good to be the person who can help. So you're not taking anything away from them. You're actually letting them feel good by supporting you. So there's definitely no shame in taking support when it's offered. So yeah, it was a good week in that way.
I feel like that's a really good reminder too, that generally people offer help because they want to be able to help.
That's right. And they have the capacity to do it. I would hope anyway. And if they don't, then it's also okay to say, this is what I can.
Then that's kind of on them.
Yeah, that's right. Or to even say, this is what I can help with. Here is something that I can do. Would that be helpful to you? That's another way you can do it too. Yeah. To have your own boundaries up about what you can help with, but to be able to offer what you have or what you can. All right. Why don't we introduce our guest for the week?
All right.
Today, we are excited to be talking to Tracy Potter Finns, who's joining us from Montana. We've had a couple of Montana guests. You're not our very first one, Tracy, but thank you for joining us today. And we always start our interviews with the same question for everybody. So this is your way to introduce yourself to our listeners. So we always ask, what are you growing? So that could be crops, livestock, kids, careers, businesses, and whatever else might be growing at your place. So Tracy, what are you growing?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat with you both. And what are we growing right now? We're growing a 2.5-year-old, number one, who's our manager on the farm and, you know, runs us ragged as everybody else who has a 2.5-year-old. And we have a lot of things growing on the farm. We have everything is in the greenhouse or just getting started in the field these days. So everything is little baby stage, with the exception of our tulips. So we have, when we're recording right now, we have about 30,000 tulips in our high tunnel that are just about getting ready to bloom. And when this recording comes out, we'll have almost 30,000 tulips in our coolers that are headed out for Mother's Day sales. So those are the main ones that we're growing. But more specifically, we have a lot of tomatoes and garlic in the field. And we have a lot of seedlings for our vegetable crops, but more so seedlings for our flowers. Can you hear Imogen in the background?
We can, but that's fine. It's a parenting podcast. People should expect it. They might think it's their own kid when they're listening.
She's going to be in and out. Yeah, actually, that's happened to me. So lots of seedlings, and we are growing our flower business to include things like wholesale accounts and a lot of these bigger crops like tulips and peonies and lysianthus, things that we can do a lot of and provide for wedding florists and event florists and brick and mortar florists too. So
Tracy, where in Montana are you and what is your growing season like? I was surprised recently we had a guest on from Alaska whose zone is warmer than ours is in Northeast Iowa, which I thought was surprising. I was trying to figure out if it was lower or higher, but warmer is safe.
That is shocking. Interesting. Yeah. We're in zone 5B, I believe, these days, with the new zoning map. So we're in western Montana. We're about an hour and a half from the Idaho border, just outside of Missoula, Montana. I always figure our last frost date is going to be right around June 1st. So we don't plant anything super sensitive until the first week of June. And our first frost date could be anywhere between middle of September for an early frost to middle of October for a late frost year. We plan for about the first week of October. Usually mid-September, we'll get one brief frost and then we can keep everything alive for another few weeks. So we kind of plan for October-ish.
Right. So kind of what amount of space are you growing all of these different things on? Because it's sometimes it's hard for us to picture, you know, how many tulips take up, you know, like that number of tulips, how much space do they actually take up? Or what does that look like for the, you know, your entire kind of acreage or greenhouse space?
They don't take up nearly as much space as you would have expected. The tulips that we're growing, I'll answer that first and then I'll go to the other stuff. The tulips that we're growing right now, 30,000 tulips fit in a little bit more than half of one of our high tunnels, which is 100 feet by 34 feet. Not very much space.
They're really packed in there.
Yeah. So we could fit, if we planted wall to wall in those high tunnels, we could fit 80,000 tulips in one tunnel, which is totally bonkers.
That's a shitload of tulips. Like that's...
It's a shitload of tulips. Yeah. suffice it to say, we grow a shitload of tulips in the middle of Montana. So we grow on, it's about 3 acres total. About half is veggies, about half is flowers, but the veggies at any given time take up quite a bit less space than the flowers simply because we do a lot of arugula, which has a tarping, remay, then planting, and seeding rotation. So it's not growing in all of that acre and a half at any given time. Whereas the flowers, which are a lot of perennials these days, really do take up that acre and a half pretty much all the time. And I should have said before, we are on the tribal land of a bunch of different tribes, specifically the Kootenai and Shoshone and Clark Fork Nations. And we occupy, wow, I'm really butchering that. Maybe I'll do that one again in a little bit. basically, we occupy tribal land and we are guests here and we do have a reparations program to help us reconcile the ways in which we're using this land and the ways in which we have owned land that really shouldn't be owned by any of us at any given time.
I know I was looking at your website and looking at the information about your reparations program, and I was hoping you could tell us a little more about that because there seems to be a lot of increasing understanding that this isn't really our land and that this land was not empty when we got here. But it's really difficult it can be very difficult to find meaningful ways to do something about it besides just saying, hey, this isn't really ours, but like, you know, I live in Iowa. There are obviously still native people here. There are still tribes here, but there's not like a neighbor right next door that I could give this to, you know, like it's not as straightforward as it could have been at other times in history. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's definitely not straightforward. For us, it took us a long time to decide how we wanted to approach our reparations program, and we've decided on a monetary donation as the best way for us to support Indigenous tribes and Indigenous peoples and communities sustainably, meaning that we can do it every year or almost every year in a way that really does make an impact for them, and it doesn't give them just like the scraps that we have left, which are pretty variable and could be a lot, could be a little bit, but gives them more of a consistent, consistent support. So it's not perfect, but our program is pretty much entirely financial, and we base our contributions on our taxes, so our property taxes specifically, which kind of gives us a good ballpark. I got that idea from Bo over at Dandy Ram Farm in Maine, who mentioned that at some point on Instagram, and I kind of grabbed onto that because I really like the idea of having some parameters around what we're doing for reparations. And otherwise we just kind of said, oh, we could send $100 today. Sure. Maybe we could do another 100 in a couple of weeks. But having that goal really helps me budget for those reparations and kind of wrap my head around it. So if we're going to pay our property taxes are around $4,000 a year. So if we're going to pay around $4,000 a year, that's our goal for our reparations program. It doesn't always make 4,000. In fact, we're still working up to that, but that is our general goal. So as much as we can contribute towards that goal is sort of what we do. We also focus specifically on the tribal nations and indigenous peoples in our area or in Montana, and ideally who are programs that are focusing on food sovereignty and or farming and land access. So trying to get our support, we're sort of focusing our support towards those tribal organizations that are working with food sovereignty and land access. As a farm, we obviously gain a lot of benefit. We gain our entire living off of this land. So we figure we can contribute to the organizations who are also looking at food sovereignty and land access. We do also contribute to the Murdered and Missing Indigenous Peoples organizations, which are pretty prominent out here. And so food access or food sovereignty, land access, and women's rights or queer rights.
That makes a lot of sense to have that common language and understanding of, you know, what you're doing and where your income is coming from and the projects that people are working on. And then, you know, there can be that shared, those shared values, you know, for what that word is worth. Sometimes I struggle with that the way that comes out, but, you know, like to have a similar vocabulary and understanding of how you're using the land and how they are using the land, or their goals are probably similar to yours.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when it comes to what you're growing, where and how are you selling all of the things? I'm like picturing all those tulips. where do they all end up? Are you doing farmers markets, farm stands? Like, what is your business model in terms of where everything ends up?
Yeah, so we started with farmers market and CSA and a little bit of wholesale vegetables. And we've grown to do all of that still. So we still do our farmers market, but our market doesn't start until May. So we do sell tulips at farmers market, but it's sort of the very end of our season. And we sell through our CSA program. So we do flower shares, just like a vegetable CSA. People come and pick up their flower bundle every week from us at a local, it's not a brewery, it's a cider house. And we do wholesale as well. So we work with a couple different wholesalers, specifically the Western Montana Growers Co-op for vegetables and a group called Farm to Florist Montana. And they do most of our Mother's Day tulips coming up. They distribute those to brick and mortar florists. So we also started this year a wholesale market ourselves. So we have a section on our website for smaller florists and event designers and artists. So we don't service the brick and mortars as much, but we do a lot of the smaller accounts through our wholesale platform, which we call Petal House. And we have a farm stand also. And we service restaurants. So
you're doing all the things.
We're doing all the things. We have Abby, our delivery person this year, is out on deliveries this morning. So she's going to a local store to drop off pre-order bundles for flowers that people ordered and flowers for grab and go bundles and to 4 different restaurants for display and deliveries to our CSA members who ordered through a different farm that we work with that has a wider reach than we do. And then we stocked our farm stand this morning. So we kind of did all of the things. We did our Petal House delivery yesterday.
That is a lot of different platforms and contacts. And, you know, I think a lot of us, or I'm going to speak for myself, I'm a dairy farmer and we get to milk cows and then someone comes and picks up our milk. So there's, you know, just thinking
dreamy.
Yeah. To think about all the administration and marketing and platforms and technology and talking and emailing and communicating that all of those sales takes. How much time are you finding you're spending farming versus how much time are you spending on the business side of farming?
I would love to spend more time farming. I spend a lot of time parenting and a lot of time on the computer / on the phone. I think one of our goals for the next couple of years is to refine what we're doing and really either be able to hand off some of those administrative roles, because we do all of it, or we refine the outlets that we're selling through so that we're not spending quite as much administrative time. Petal House, the wholesale flower market, is brand new for us, and that's something that we're really excited about expanding and doing more of because it's really straightforward. And we don't do a whole lot of talking to people for it. It's all online. And we really like working with our other wholesalers because they take care of all of the talking to customers part. And we're trying to figure out what we want to do. The other thing the piece that I forgot about our markets is that my partner, Bethany Stanberry, she does weddings. So she does big design work for weddings. That piece has by far the most logistical back and forth with brides or wedding planners, event spaces, wholesale flower growers, because we can't grow everything that she needs all the time. So she spends a lot of time on the computer creating proposals for people, making orders, ordering vases and vessels and ribbon and the, you know, particular clippers that she needs for the various flowers. So I think that piece we're trying to also refine a little bit. Maybe in the future we do, you know, 10 larger weddings and that's it for the season. But it's been a lot of administrative work. And one of the challenges that we have is that I'm a farmer that's been doing this since 2011. So my ex-partner and I started a vegetable farm 14 years ago. This is my 14th season, 15th season, something like that, growing vegetables. And Bethany is in her 5th season growing flowers. So I'm at a place where I refine my crops. We used to grow all of the vegetables, and now we grow 3 big ones. We grow arugula, we grow tomatoes, and we grow garlic. Everything else is for ourselves and our staff, and it's very small scale. And Bethany is just on the tail end of growing everything and figuring out what works for the flower side. So she has that new farmer energy that just wants to, you know, throw all of the pasta at the wall and see what sticks. And I'm at the side where I'm like, wow, let's not do that. Let's do less. So we've been working on that kind of push and pull for a few years. And I feel like we're starting to get to the point where we can say, okay, these things work with flowers. These things don't work for us with flowers. This is the direction that we want to go in. And it'll probably be another 2 years before we really get that refined. But I think we're starting to get there. So in the meantime, it's a ton of admin work while we're doing all of the markets and throwing all of the spaghetti at the wall to see which ones we like. And with flowers, everything has to be really pretty. It didn't have to be pretty with vegetables. It had to look like decent.
Yeah, you can sell some slightly wonky looking tomatoes, but yeah, people want their wedding flowers to look perfect.
And you better have a nice website. Anyway, to answer your question, a lot of admin work, not as much work farming. Go ahead, Katie. Sorry.
I love the idea too. I'm in my 15th year. My husband is, you know, grew up on the farm, so he's in his 45th season, I guess, of growing. But I love the idea of this new farmer energy. Like it would be like a, like the air fresheners you get for your car, you know, that have like the new car smell. You could just get like a little medallion to wear with like new farmer energy. What is that like? Is the more, I don't know, jaded member of the partnership, maybe? Like, how do you handle...
Are you saying, Katie, you still have new farmer energy, or are you starting to mellow out?
It depends, Arlene. I think if I got a full night of sleep... Tracy, my kids are older than yours, but not by that much. Yeah, yeah. Actually, we're almost done, but yeah.
Yeah, you're still in the middle of lambing, so yeah.
I'm a pretty impulsive person, so I still have that much of the new farmer energy. But how do you temper wanting to tell her to chill out as a new farmer and, you know, also not ruining her enjoyment of the parts that are still fun?
Oh my God, what a good question. Well, I resist saying...
Yeah, not to put you on the spot, but please fix all of our relationships.
Yeah. Right, totally. Well, I resist making faces at new ideas and saying, fuck no, no, absolutely not, as much as I can. And sometimes I just look at her and she's like, it's a good idea. Don't give me that face. So I am not an impulsive person at all, really. I'm a Virgo, and while I don't really believe in astrology, I definitely identify with, like, I like spreadsheets, you know, I like things to be expected. I like to know what's coming. I like to be prepared. I like to have my ducks in a row. And Bethany is a...
Yeah, you're speaking my language. I get it.
Yeah. Bethany is a Pisces. Again, I don't really believe in astrology, but Pisces is a water sign, and they're like very impulsive. They're very creative. They have ideas constantly, and Bethany has ideas constantly and has really incredible, expensive ideas constantly. She's an amazing artist and does these incredible photo shoots that are, it really do enhance our business and enhance the wedding side of things and her sort of her portfolio as a designer, and they exhaust me. And it's really hard for me to balance wanting to have all of our ducks in a row, and wanting her to be as expressive and creative and the incredible designer that she is, because they don't always line up. And I really have to be reminded by her and by others that, like, this is something that's really important, not just for our business, because it is, but also for all of our mental health. Like, her creativity is comes out in a way that actually enhances our business, which is great, right? That is ideal for my spreadsheet side. And sometimes that's hard for me to want to just let all of the pieces go and see where they land, because I want to be able to rein it in and control those things. So it's a push and pull. And definitely, I think on our website, Bethany made a bio for all of our team members and for us. And I believe my tagline is eventual yes, ma'am. And by that, she means she'll throw an idea at me and I'll say, I don't know. And then 2 weeks later, I'll be like, okay, so I was thinking that we could build a ladder that would then hook to that structure, and then you could put your display and your installation on there, and it would tie in this way, because eventually I'm going to do it, likely, unless it's so far-fetched. I just need time for it to like settle and be convinced that it's something that we can do and get excited about it.
Yeah, you need to figure out the logistical side of it. Yeah. And the thing with ideas in farming especially is that the idea today requires months or sometimes years to come to fruition. So as the more experienced farmer, you're thinking, yeah, those flowers are beautiful, but do you know how long they take to grow? And they mature at a time when the other ones aren't, or, you know, all those, you know, the things that are probably running through your head as the person who has maybe more knowledge of dirt and seasonality and all those types of things versus the pretty flower that comes out at the end and what you're going to do with it.
Yes. And Bethany's really good at putting it into perspective for me and saying, like, well, I want these peonies now. And I'm like, they take 3 years to grow. We're not going to have them when you want them. And she's like, that's why we should have planted them a year ago and we need them now. I'm like, oh, I can't argue with that. And I will say that the farm has changed a lot since she's joined. She moved here in 2019. We've been together since about then. And the farm has radically changed for the better. We have incredible perennials. We have incredible flower assets in a way that I would never have gone out on that limb. And I really credit her dreamy side in changing the farm and allowing it for it to be in the iteration that it is now, which eventually, with as many perennials as we're doing and what the way that we can market our flowers, allows us to have a family and be with our family. Vegetables at our scale are much harder to do that because none of them are perennial. And they take a lot more time and effort for less revenue because we don't have a large economy of scale. Whereas flowers really bring in the flowers are valuable in the way that they are luxury goods, and we can charge enough for them that will eventually, not yet, but eventually allow us to actually make a profit on what we're doing and to have a family and spend time with our family in a way that would have been much harder for just a small vegetable farm. And I really appreciate her dreamy side in that way for really expanding and growing our farm, because, you know, I'd be growing tomatoes and arugula and selling them at wholesale prices for my whole life. And I would have been fine with that. But we have a much more beautiful, creative, community-driven life now. And I really value that.
So as a stable salad spreadsheet person, mentioning, you know, spending more time with your family, how's that 2.5-year-old working out for you? Real, real stable? Real predictable? Yeah. 2.5-year-olds are maniacs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. maniac. She is a maniac. She's super fun. She is very chatty and loves to sing songs and, you know, bolt out the door and run down the road and leave us in the dust. She loves looking for worms, you know, all of the things that 2-year-olds love. She is not stable. She does not fit into a spreadsheet at all. And I love it. I think Bethany and I have done a lot of work on ourselves and with our families and communities to be pretty regulated human beings. And I feel like we are able to navigate the 2-year-old massive dysregulation that is every hour of every day fairly well, even though it's very frustrating and we both need breaks. We have childcare. Our friend Casper, who we absolutely love and who is Imogen's best friend, comes 2 or 3 days a week for 4 or 5 hours, and they hang out, and there's another kiddo that comes and hangs out with them one day a week. So we get some breaks there, but we don't have Imogen in daycare, and we mostly just trade off our childcare. So, like, yesterday, for example, we were down a person for our wholesale harvest day. I worked all morning getting our microgreens harvested and packed and ready to go and making sure everything was watered and opened, and then traded off with Bethany for the afternoon. So Imogen and I did a little bit of farm walking around, and then we went to town and ran some errands so that Bethany could work on her wedding proposals and computer work and communication with that. And today, Bethany was out this morning working on the last of the orders that were going out today. Imogen and I came to help for a little bit, and now she's on Imogen duty for a while I'm on this podcast. And then we'll switch off again later today. So there's a lot of daily back and forth. We don't have a solid schedule, which again, it would be really nice if I just said, oh, every morning I work on the farm, Bethany has Imogen. Every afternoon I have Imogen, Bethany does farm work. But it never quite works out that way because we're both full-time farmers. We both work from home. It's very flexible and it's hard to stick to those rigid schedules when the weather or our crew, which is wonderful, but people get sick, people go on vacation, somebody's not here, we have a special request delivery, or Imogen's sick, whatever it is. I have a phone call, Bethany has a phone call. So it's a lot of communication and just switching back and forth for us. And that works fairly well. I would say sometimes it's more frustrating than others, but for now it's pretty good. And Imogen is a very active kiddo. So we have a few things that we know that we can just go do, like finding worms or running around or going for a drive is a good one. She likes to get off the farm and go see things. So yeah, Imogen's great. We do want to have more kids in the future and trying to figure out how to work that in. But we definitely have loved every stage. I'll speak for myself. I've definitely loved every stage of Imogen's life on the farm and in our lives. I think it's been really cool to see her learn colors by the colors of the flowers and, you know, learn about worms and insects outside on our property. When she was first starting to speak, she was saying things like Lysianthus and Ranunculus. And that was really cool. And we have two dogs, so she gets to run around and play with the dogs. And we dug a new well, so there's a big sand pit now. So that's really fun. You know, there's a lot to do.
Yeah, the power of dirt and sand should not be underestimated. I know whenever we get a new sand delivery, that was usually the highlight of the summer. The pile of sand in the yard was...
Sorry, I said I was going to order a truck of rock for my kids every spring for Christmas. Just get them, because they'll play on a rock pile for weeks, you know, and eventually they've got most of it spread, you know, and then you just bring another rock pile, dump it somewhere else, and yeah, let them go for it.
Yeah, it gradually moves its way onto the driveway. And
brilliant.
Yeah. Where do we need some more fill this summer? Sneak that in there.
Podcasts are free to listen to, but they aren't free to create. Katie and I would appreciate your support as we work to build the Barnyard Language community.
Patreon is an easy way for you to make a contribution that goes directly to making the show. As a member of our Patreon community, you get to watch the video version of our weekly updates, complete with questionable hairstyles and clutter. With three levels of support, you can choose a tier that works for you.
Keep the podcast going by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/barnyardlanguage.
So when you were talking about your daughter growing up on the farm, I gather from how long you said you've been in agriculture and what I am assuming your age is, you didn't grow up on a farm. So how did you end up in this lifestyle? How did you end up in agriculture?
So I grew up in Moscow, Idaho. My mom was a professor of forestry, so not farming, but, you know, outdoors and working with plants. And my dad was had a computer software company, so more of the techie side of things. I went to college and was in sort of social sciences and was interested in that, but wound up working with the WOOF program, the Willing Workers on Organic Farms in Europe, for about 6 months, and then came home and got a job on a farm. And I really loved the people. I loved the food. I love being outside and working with my body and my hands. And it kind of just stuck. I did finish school. I have a degree in comparative religion, which I think helps me write grants because I'm a decent writer. But other than that, doesn't do a whole lot for me right now. The place that I went to school was a big agricultural area. I met some wonderful people and I really got immersed in the farm world. And then when we moved to Montana, that was the goal, to start a small farm. And we did. And yeah, my ex and I really built this farm, and I credit both of us, them and our working together to, you know, what we have today in a lot of ways.
So sorry, I was lost a little bit. Garlic braids on Instagram. Do people actually use them, or do they just I'm a garlic lover. I would just festoon my house with garlic braids. No vampires here. But what do people do with them?
Some of my favorite hashtags, I don't use them a lot, but on Instagram, some of my favorite hashtags are about garlics and garlic braids and vampires and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. People eat them. At least I hope that they eat them. The idea is that you would buy a garlic braid every year, and that garlic would be your garlic for the year, or close to the year, depending on how much garlic you eat. And then in the middle of summer, when garlic's ready again, you buy another one. So you can clip with those braids that have the flowers in the middle, the dried flowers. You can actually clip off the garlic all the way up the braid. And what you're left is sort of the skeleton of flowers, which on its own is actually a really lovely sort of wall hanging in itself. And if you don't have flowers in it and you just clip it off, you're left with this really cool dried garlic stem braid hanging on the wall. So yes, people use them. I encourage them to use them. Having said that, we definitely have one hanging that's 6 years old on our wall because we never got to it. Garlic's no good, obviously, but it still looks like a garlic braid. It's pretty dusty, but still hanging, still going. Yeah, we really like making those braids. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, they incorporating the flowers. And if people haven't looked at them already, they should go check them out because they're stunning.
I'm going to ask that horrifying question since you mentioned them getting dusty. We have 5 cats and 2 dogs and live on a gravel road, and I have better things to do than vacuuming or dusting or whatever. Is there any trick to de-dustifying something like a garlic braid, or do you just accept that you're not eating the outside and give it a good shake and call it good?
Yeah, I think just give it a good shake. I don't know if there's really any good way to dust those dried flowers. That's the one issue that I have with dried flowers. I should ask our friend that does a lot of them, because they just get so dusty, and I don't know how to brush them off without the petals all falling off. We originally started Field 5 Flowers, so Bethany's flower part of the farm, as a dried flower business, and then discovered that neither of us really like dried flowers unless they're in garlic braids. So we are no longer experts, and we never were experts on dried flowers. But the garlic for sure is perfectly good. Just wipe it off and peel it.
Yeah, it's ready to go. Maybe not after 6 years, but yeah, in that first season.
And then I put in here too, as a flower farmer, presumably on Valentine's Day, you're not like running down to your local florist to get possibly substantially overcharged for subpar flowers. What do you get your partner for events when you already grow flowers? My husband and I were just talking the other night about the year he did buy me flowers for Valentine's Day, and I found the receipt, and it kind of ruined it because he had never bought flowers before and had no idea how badly he had gotten screwed. So it just made me wonder what you do in that situation. Buy seeds, maybe? Plants?
Yep, we buy plants. So for our anniversary, we buy a few rose plants every year and plant them. Bethany really loves, she's also a jewelry designer, which makes buying jewelry very hard because she is a designer and has very specific tastes. But jewelry is always a good one. And we still bring in flowers for all of the events. So like for Valentine's Day, we actually forced tulips for Valentine's Day. We had, 5,000 tulips for Valentine's Day this year. So we just put a really big display in our house. And for some of those flower holidays, we don't really get to celebrate them in the same way that other folks do. In fact, Valentine's Day and Mother's Day.
Yeah, the flower holidays are your busy season. So
yeah, Valentine's Day and Mother's Day weren't even really on my radar previously. Obviously, Valentine's Day, like maybe I would write a nice note or, you know, pick a few flowers from the yard. But now we're kind of working our butts off, especially for Mother's Day. And Mother's Day definitely was one of those holidays that I would call my mom and tell her that I loved her. And that was about it. And now it's a big work day for us. So flower farming is interesting in that it has those big holidays that are really important. Vegetable farming, you don't really have like a tomato day a year, you know, like there's not a day where arugula is really in demand.
No one gives tomatoes for Valentine's Day.
But they should. They really shouldn't, not here, because nobody has tomatoes for Valentine's Day.
There's that big tomato fight in Spain. Maybe you should create something like that in your nearest town.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, there you go. That is totally a big event. For her birthday this year, we took a little trip to a nearby town and went to a restaurant that we've been wanting to go to, stayed overnight, got a haircut. You know, I like made all these appointments for her for like a massage and a haircut. And those are the things that we do instead of getting bundles of flowers from our florists.
And that is how an organized person shows their love too, booking appointments for the person who is less organized, not less organized, but yeah, you're planning ahead for them. That is a love language right there.
Yeah.
Sorry, if somebody made all my phone calls and made all my appointments for me, I would absolutely see that as a sign of their undying devotion. So in case anyone's wondering what I want for holidays, I want somebody else to make my phone calls.
So as a parenting podcast, we already talked a little bit about your little one. And I know that if this is too personal, you can tell me to shove it. But I was curious because, you know, for some of us, getting pregnant is, you know, like you say, let's start trying and then you end up having a baby. But for not all people, that is not the way it happens. So between you and your partner, how did you decide who was going to be the one to grow and give birth to your daughter?
Yeah, I don't mind the question at all. I think we should all be talking more about those decisions. There were a lot of factors. One of them was that Bethany really felt strongly about wanting to be pregnant at some point in her life. And while I also am interested in being pregnant, in fact, I'll be the next one to try to get pregnant. But it wasn't something that's sort of a make or break in my life. Bethany's also a little bit older than me by a year and a half, 2 years, something like that, like year and a half. So just for age of our bodies, it made sense for her to try first. And we were really lucky that we have a known donor, so a friend of ours who is our donor. And we actually got pregnant on the first try at home. Using sort of turkey baster method, which is not literally a turkey baster, but, you know, like a little medicine syringe, basically. It loses its awkwardness after a couple times, but it's pretty awkward at first. But we got pregnant the first try, so that clearly we figure that there was an entity, a kiddo, waiting for that to happen, if it happens so easily, so fast, in a space that we obviously were really welcoming that and made that decision. A few factors, mostly that she really wanted to be pregnant, and that she was a little bit older, and it happened really fast.
Yeah. So with a family who has a known donor, is that someone who chooses or does not choose to be part of your child's life? Or how does that relationship look for your family? I'm sure it's different for everyone, but.
Yeah, it's definitely different for everybody, every family, every donor, every situation. We spent a long time trying to figure out who we wanted as our donor, and then kind of joked around with a friend of ours who I've known since I was about 3 months old. My best friend growing up, her husband is our donor. And I had said, oh, haha, what about him? And she was like, oh, that would be funny. And then a couple weeks later, we were like, but what if it wasn't just funny? What if it was like a real thing? And he's a lawyer, which is really helpful. So he knows all of the ins and outs of the legalities of it. And we have all of the paperwork laid out, of course. But in this case, we our preference would have been somebody who we know, who already has kids, and really understands what that means to like have a kiddo in your life and understand what that feels like. And somebody that we could treat sort of as like an uncle figure, a special relationship with our kiddo. So it helps that in this case, they happen to be a family that was already part of our family because I grew up with his wife. And we see them pretty frequently. They live in the same city that Bethany's parents live in. So we see them for major holidays and we go visit. They're only a couple hours away from us. And Imogen has two special cousins that she gets to see all the time who are biologically her half siblings, and gets to have a relationship with our donor and his family, in a way that feels really positive to all of us. And we really hope that that continues, for her and for any other kids that may come along. I dated somebody in college who didn't know their donor, and that was really hard for them growing up, and as an adult. And I feel like it was something that I really wanted, if we could, I really wanted that to be somebody who our kids could reach to if they felt like they wanted to and have a relationship with growing up. But I think we have a very, our relationship with our donor and his family is really special and pretty unique. And everybody has their own journey and their own donor, and none of them are better or worse. This one just happened to be a good fit for us at this time.
Sure. Yeah. It sounds like it has worked out really well too, in terms of what works for all the parties involved, right? That it was a decision that everyone was able to come to. How old are the cousins? And did they already know, or at what point do you think they will know about the biological relationship?
Yeah, I think we've all talked about how as soon as they start asking questions that we'll answer honestly and kind of start out vaguely. And then as they ask more and more questions, we'll get more and more specific. We're not planning on hiding any information from them, obviously. They are, let's see. The oldest one just turned 6, which means that the youngest one is 4 and will be 5 later this year. And Imogen is 2.5. So they're all kind of spaced out pretty well. So she gets playmates that are just a little bit older than her, which is really fun. Well, it's really fun for Imogen and the oldest cousin. The middle cousin's not so sure. Yeah, the oldest one has, I think, asked a few sort of very broad questions, but because we were already part of their lives, I think it's a little bit less of a pointed, it's a little bit less of a point. If all of a sudden we had shown up and were just like there all the time, I think she probably would have more questions. But yeah, I think we'll kind of approach that as it comes up and go from there and answer as many questions as they have.
Yeah, for sure. So for a lot of reasons, and I mean, let's be honest, the patriarchy is the main one. But for those of us who have male partners, we often end up being the default or primary parent, especially at the beginning, you know, in those early weeks, the early months of, you know, especially if you are the one who gave birth to the child, or even if you aren't, if you were adopting, it seems that often women end up becoming the default parent. So I know you already talked about how it works now in terms of, you know, swapping off childcare and stuff, but what was your experience like in becoming mothers at the same time and how that distribution of labor, especially in the early stages, worked between the two of you?
Yeah, I would say that part of it goes back to that where we were in our farming careers also. So because I, as a new mother, was very ready for this switch in my world. So I'd been farming for, you know, 10 years, 11 years. The farm had been my baby for a really long time. That's where all of my attention went. And before we had Imogen, before we even decided to get pregnant, I was like, okay, I'm ready for a change. I'm ready for something else to be my baby, like a literal or figuratively, whatever it was going to be. But I'm ready for that big switch in my life. I can hand off a lot of these farm tasks. I can hire a manager. I'm okay handing it off and not having like the eyes on everything at any given time. Bethany, on the other hand, was still a really new flower farmer and florist, and really wanted hands-on and to know what was going on. And in the first year or so, I kind of became more of the default parent for that reason, because I was much more willing to just be like, whatever's happening out there, we'll figure it out. I don't even care right now. I care about being here with my kiddo. And for Bethany, she really wanted to be out and doing things a little bit more. And that's kind of the way that it fell. Imogen also had, as she got a little bit older, started pushing Bethany away in the way that sometimes nursing parents get pushed away, as the kid wants more autonomy. And so I became more of the default parent in that role also. And I don't think it'll always be that way, but definitely in the way that our careers are working and the way that she, you know, I can hand off, tomato trellising to almost anybody, almost anybody. No one else can do the same kind of design work that Bethany can.
Not Imogen yet.
Oh man, one day Imogen will not just be picking green tomatoes off the plants. Bethany has to be hands-on for specifically the wedding design work. You know, some of the other smaller designs, we have other people that we work with, which is great. But for those big things, it really does hinge on Bethany's creativity and her design eye. And that's not something that she can ask me to do, because I make a bouquet and I'm like, this is pretty good, right, babe? And she goes, fuck no, what did you do? And I'm like, well, I used the same things that you did. I put them in the same places. And she's like, no, you didn't. Give it to me. Which I 100% acknowledge. It's not my strength. I can make single bunches of varieties.
That's just a group of flowers in your hand.
Yeah, totally. She's very good at what she does. So I have become more of the default parent in that role.
Tracy, I have to say, as someone who never really got the whole like cut flower thing and who ordered wedding flowers because I was told I had to, it's astounding what a difference having the right wedding florist and the right wedding flowers makes in the way the whole day feels. I really did not expect it. And as someone who went to our florist and went, it should be bright colors and kind of fluffy. And, you know, to work with someone who could translate that into something that was worth paying money for, is a real talent. You know, I guess my other question is, in our household, at least, I mean, I've always been kind of the default parent because I was a stay-at-home mom and, you know, plus the mommy. My kids are very much only mommy still. They're 7 and almost 6 next week. And it is still, you know, only mommy can get me dressed. Only mommy can get me out of bed. Does Imogen just look for whichever of you it will be more inconvenient to ask for something? Or does she have a pretty set preference? Or is she just like, which one of them looks busier? You know, who looks less excited about doing this?
It depends on the day, for sure. There was a long time when she would only want me to do things, only comfort her. Like she falls, she would only want me. But she's pretty good about letting each of us do the things that need to be done, especially if we tell her that we're busy and we need to go do something else. She seems to get that, at least for now. So whoever's around, Mama T or Mama B, you know, most of the time, either of us are good bets. Every once in a while, she'll, you know, only want Bethany to make her a pancake or only want me to take the diaper off or whatever.
So Tracy, what is your favorite part of raising a child on the farm? What do you like about having a kid on the land?
I love everything about it. I love having her close by to us, and she gets to see us working. She gets to see us doing the things that we're best at and feel really confident in what we're doing. She gets to see us using our bodies and using our brains to figure out what we're going to do next. She gets to see us communicating between each other for business stuff and personal stuff, and communicating with our crew. She gets to interact with our crew, so she gets a lot of people around who care about her and are watching out for her. I love how much wonder there is. You know, I forget that our space isn't that big. We own 9.5 acres, but, you know, you kind of see it all from one point. There aren't a whole lot of trees. It doesn't look that big, but when you're two, everything is a discovery, and it's really cool to see her run around and run up to us and say, "Mama, there's some worms over there. Did you see the beetle? Did you see the ants? There's a spider over there." That kind of wonder is really, really exciting to me. But I think one of the biggest things is that I get to just be with her every day. Even when we have our childcare person around, she's still on the farm. She's still like, you know, if she falls down or there's something really exciting the next time I come in the house for a snack or for water, she tells me about it. Or she's like, you know, Casper says Imogen might need a little hug, and she'll come up to me and give me a big hug. And I really love those moments where I get to interact with her and I get to see her for my whole day, because I know that there will be a time when I won't get to see her most of the day, when, you know, 75% of our waking hours or more, she's going to be somewhere else, which makes me like feel things just saying it. And I want to soak up as much of that time as I possibly can while she's still with us, and while I can still be close to her physically, even if I'm not right next to her for most of our day. I think that's a really beautiful part of working at home. It doesn't have to be farming, I suppose, but working at home and working in a way that sometimes she can be with us, sometimes she can weed with us, she can harvest with us. It's not efficient. I wouldn't say that it's our most productive times of the day, but it's really beautiful for me to be with her in that way. And I love that we're able to do that.
There is something about being able to share what you're doing with your kids too, in a way that they understand it, right? I'm sure there's so many kids out there, and it's not that it's right or wrong, but that don't really know what their parents do, maybe even into adulthood, that don't really know what it is that their parents do for their careers. But being on a farm is a way that we can physically, you know, demonstrate what it is that we do and how our family is able to make a living. And that's pretty powerful. What is your biggest parenting struggle these days? And it doesn't have to be farm related necessarily.
Biggest struggle. I think the dysregulation emotionally is the biggest struggle. Just going from 0 to 50 at any given moment. Time management is also one, but I think the emotional part is sort of seeps into everything else, right? Like if she's having a rough day where she's fine and then super upset and then fine and then super upset, for the most part, me and Bethany are really able to be calm and sort of even keeled around her, but inside we're still reacting to those like spikes in our, you know, in our emotional regulation and in our brains and our bodies. And it's really tiring. It's really tiring emotionally. It's tiring physically. And I think both of us really feel that when we're having hard days, we both need times when we just have to walk out the door. Like, I just walk out the door, like, I gotta go weed something and, you know, go somewhere by myself, take some breaths. And not in a way that, like, I feel like I'm gonna explode at her or at anything else, but just that I need something for, like, I kind of imagine, like, all those emotions get built up inside me. And then when I'm outside doing things on the farm, they kind of, like, drain out of me through my feet and my hands. I can sort of feel myself release all of that energy. And that's really helpful. So I think that's the biggest challenge. Luckily, we have ways that we can release that energy and those emotions. But yeah, those 2.5-year-old vibes, real strong, real strong. She's a headstrong mm-hmm. kiddo. And
yeah, it's amazing how quickly... Yeah, how quickly they can recover from something, you know, like they get the yellow cup or whatever it is that they were freaking out about, and then they're happy and your adrenaline is still coursing through your body. Yeah, even if you're trying to stay calm on the surface, right? It's like, how did you just recover from all of that?
Yep, exactly.
I think it's so, so good though for, it's so good for kids to see parents working at work and at frustrating things, you know, on the farm, but also seeing adults do the work of re-regulating after there's, you know, an upheaval, because I think, you know, a lot of us in our generation kind of grew up with adults who were a lot more emotionally distant and sort of, you never saw them actively doing the work of improving themselves or, you know, getting back on track, let's put it that way, that they either didn't have emotions or it was all emotions and no regulation. And I think letting kids really see what the process is of not being like that is incredibly helpful for them.
Yeah, I agree.
Or at least that's what I tell myself when I lose my shit and then have to apologize to my young children.
No, I think it's really good. I think that there's a lot of the social media, a lot of what's around us is like, you can never lose it. And that's so unrealistic, both for us and for them, you know, like they're going to get upset sometimes and that's okay. It's more about like, how do you go from there? And what are the actions that you take from there instead of it's never going to happen again. Cause of course it's going to happen again.
Katie, do you want to go into our final question? Unless you've got another one that's, all right.
Nope. So we ask all of our guests, if you were going to dominate a category at the county fair, what would it be? And categories can be real or made up to ensure that you win.
I knew this question was coming and I don't have anything prepared. I mean, maybe I'll just go with garlic braids. Like if there was a garlic braid category, I feel like our garlic braids are pretty phenomenal. I'll go with that. Really going classic. Could be an actual category. You know, I think they're pretty fair worthy.
I'm thinking your local fair probably wouldn't make a category because they're like, well, we already know who would win. So no one else is even going to enter. But that is a good one. Yeah.
Maybe someday Imogen will be interested in doing fair things.
Yeah.
Tracy, we had a guest on last season who braids horse tails and manes professionally. And I feel like she might be prepared to give you a run for your money in garlic braiding. Like obviously garlic and horse hair are different, but anyone who can braid horses for a living, I feel like might stand a chance. I would go to a fair to watch that competition.
Yeah. She'd be a contender anyway.
She'd be a contender, but I'm also going to look her up because Bethany's planning some horse flower photo shoots this summer and some hair braiding would be really cool. Some horse hair braiding with flowers in it would be pretty fun.
Yeah, we will definitely connect you. She was...
That's the gist, like work together instead of be contenders.
If you braided garlic into them, they'd be safe from vampires too.
Perfect. No need for Buffy over here. We've got it covered.
Okay, so I'm going to move into our cussing and discussing. I already know that we're going to be cussing and discussing laggy internet because we are struggling with talking over each other today. It's not intentional, everybody. And good luck to our editor who's going to have to deal with this because we're trying to let each other talk, but the internet is not cooperating today. So, Katie, what are you cussing and discussing this week?
I'm going to drag out my soapbox for just a minute. I was talking to a friend yesterday about the state of politics in the state of Iowa and the recent repeal of child labor laws and mandatory breaks and the Area Education Association that, you know, provides therapy services for kids in schools, you know, things like speech therapy and occupational therapy and that. And it occurs to me that it is fed to us by the media and by people who make a lot of money off politics, that all of these decisions are political and that things like feeding children or saying that 14-year-olds should not be working in meatpacking plants are a political thing. And that if you oppose them, it makes you this sort of person. And I'm calling bullshit because I think that saying that 14-year-olds should not be working in meatpacking plants in the middle of the night, nonetheless, is not a political thing. It is bullshit. Child labor laws are not political. They are to protect children. And if you don't think that we should protect children or feed children or give them speech therapy services, I'm going to go ahead and say that it's probably because you're a god-awful person and not actually political. You know, I can see fighting about how these things are paid for or the best way to administer them. But if you think they shouldn't happen at all, it's because you suck. Like, I'm just going to go with that. Yeah.
Hear, hear.
All right. Tracy, what do you have to cuss and discuss this week?
Yeah.
I'll be honest, it's been a pretty good week. I'm not doing a ton of cussing right at this moment, but I will say that the paperwork side of grant admin is something that I could just leave in the dust if I fucking could. Just the reporting side, the, you know, gathering all of the quotes and the money to do the things that you want to do before you get reimbursed, and trying to navigate that side of it has been a real struggle for me. I'm pretty good at that stuff, but I don't have the time or the brain space to sit and do it this week. And all of those moving parts feel like a lot right now. More so than the moving parts of the farm, the grant admin and working with some really wonderful federal and state employees who help administer those grants. There's just a lot of back and forth, and we're really appreciative of the funding that we get, but it really does take a lot of time and energy on our side. And the timelines don't always line up with ours. One of the presentations that I had to do for one of the grants that we got partial funding for was on February 13th at 2 p.m., which is right at our Valentine's Day harvest and prep rush.
Busy. Yeah. Busiest day of the year.
Yeah. It's really busy. One of the busiest days of our year. So things like that, they just don't quite align with what we want to do. But I will second Katie, you're cussing and discussing, and say that it is bullshit and it's not political. It's a human, those are human rights. They're not, human rights should not be part of politics. Human rights should just be rights of all of us humans.
All right, Arlene, what do you have?
Yeah, I had something else, but I'm piggybacking on Tracy's because I was just working on an application or thought we had completed an application and had done all the things and there was a portal and I was sure that everything had been done perfectly because I was organized and we did all the things and I followed the spreadsheet the checklist that they said, and I did all the stuff. And then we got an email back saying, oh, sorry, you don't qualify. And then all it took was one email back saying, but I'm pretty sure I did all the stuff. Could you check that over again? And then they wrote back and said, oh yeah, you do. And I was like, but if I had just believed the first email, then I would have totally missed out on this program that I had already done the work for. Because those are the ones that are really annoying too, is you have to do all the work and then hope the money comes at the end. So that one was super annoying because all the stuff was there. And I blame the friggin' portal because it was dumb. And every time I would try and upload something, it would crash, or it would say that it had uploaded, and then I would go and refresh to make sure it was there, and then it wasn't, or it would take 6 tries for it to actually go in. And you couldn't, once you submitted something, you couldn't edit anything. So even if you uploaded the wrong thing, then you couldn't get rid of it. So yeah, technology that's supposed to make things easier and doesn't is super infuriating. So that as well, along with grant applications.
Absolutely. And yeah, I will say that for anybody listening who doesn't know if they're eligible for a grant and talk to somebody who says that maybe you aren't, maybe you are, get more opinions and talk to more people, because the really big grant that we got last year for the value-added producer grant, which is going towards our wedding flowers, I spoke to a few different people who said that flowers were not eligible, organic cut flowers were not eligible for that grant, and got emailed back and forth 5 or 6 times and was reassured they are not eligible. And then I got another phone call from a different person that said, you absolutely are eligible and you should apply, which was 3 weeks before the grant was due. And I spent all of those 3 weeks getting up very early and writing a 100-page grant, but we were awarded $250,000, $250,000 over the next 3 years for our organic cut flower and vegetable programs. So it's worth doing the extra effort, even if it's super annoying, even if the employees, government, and otherwise employees or folks that you're working with don't know what they're talking about. Pursue it, because sometimes it works out in your favor.
Yeah, that's amazing, but super frustrating to be told in various ways that you don't qualify. And then, but that's the best result, right? That there is actually money at the end of all that paperwork.
Best result.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely did not expect to get that grant, but we're very grateful when we did.
That's amazing. So we want to thank you so much, Tracy, for joining us today. If people want to find you online, check out Garlic Braids, all the beautiful wedding flowers, the arugula, which is also beautiful. Where should they find you online?
The most visually pleasing is going to be field5flowers.com and at field5flowers on Instagram. 5 is all spelled out. For the more farming side, a little bit less flower side, but still some flowers, countyrailfarm.com and countyrailfarm on Instagram.
Thank you so much. It was great meeting you and talking with you today.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Tracy.
Thanks, Arlene. Thanks, Katie. It was lovely.
Thank you for joining us on Barnyard Language. If you enjoy the show, please support us on Patreon with a donation.
Big thanks go out to our show editor, Krista Paffrath at the Rural Podcast Network.
Please rate and review the podcast wherever you listen and follow the show so you never miss an episode.
If you want to connect with other farming families, join the private Barnyard Language Facebook group.
We are always in search of future guests for the podcast. If you or someone you know would like to chat with us, get in touch.